Season 4, Episode 8, Unembraceable You. This episode starts with Russell showing up at Simone's place and just, you know, getting into some softcore. Just ripping off clothes and getting to it. On the pool, no less.
Oh my god, what?
Are you okay over there?
I was trying so hard not to laugh. The first thing in my notes. I said the lovemaking is weird. Why slam on the pole?
Also, so they
like,
get
they use that pole like it's something. It's really weird.
Also, I mean, not to point out explicitly sexual things on NYPD Blue Balls. There's a part where she just reaches her hand down his pants, and the implication
dude,
is she just
she just grabs his dick, dude. She grabs it like she's grabbing a bag of produce. Like, she's grabbing all the nuts and all the apples, baby.
Well, you know,
It's funny, though, because they reverse the roles. They make him be the one who doesn't want to have sex, and her be the, like, driving force.
Yeah.
And, like, what switches him is when she grabs his dick. Like, he's, like, kind of fighting it, and then when she just puts it there and grabs his dick, it's over.
And that also speaks to the weirdness of the scene, because then they go to the bed, and afterwards, they're naked, she's laying naked on top of him, he has a shirt on, like a shirt that's open, but
yeah,
no pants.
Yeah, weird that one thing stayed on.
And then he just, you know...
Doesn't she rip his shirt open?
Yeah, she rips his shirt open, and then he rips her shirt off to where it's just a bra, and then she goes for that root... And then he lifts her up on the thing.
They take everything else off.
Except for his overshirt.
Everything else off, and while, like, she's taking his pants off, let's say, he doesn't go like, oh, well, this shirt's, like, halfway done. Let me just finish it right off. Boom, we done.
No, he's like, we need to get to it.
Keep it on.
But they, so they obviously get to it. They're now naked in bed, and then he decides to start an argument. Because... He says, am I a ball breaker for asking what that was about? And she's kind of like, oh, whatever do you mean? And he's like, well, you know, just seemed like that was something. And she's like, I just wanted to be near you. And then he's like, well, I thought it maybe changed your mind. Because as you know, and the audience may know if they're binging it, he proposed and she kind of withheld. And then
I don't think it was wrong for him to ask what that was about.
I don't think it was either. I think it was a little weird to ask while your dick was pressed against her stomach. I feel like that's kind of a weird time to bring that up.
Oh, it ain't pressed up in anything. He in her.
You think it's
mm-hmm.
You think it's full penetration?
Oh, yeah. No, but like, I think it's a fair question. But then her answer makes him. It's kind of weird. They switched the roles, but it makes him kind of feel like a whore.
Because, yeah, she says, if getting married gets me this, then let's get married. And he's like, you're saying it like you want to go to the dentist. He's like, we're talking about my virtue here, you know, that's still intact, even though you grabbed my root and then I just threw you against the pole.
Well, I mean, you have to understand where Simone is coming from. The love of his life has died, you know, he doesn't just willy-nilly get into this shit.
No, he takes it very seriously.
You know what I mean? No. But then my favorite is at the end of the fight, he basically says, like, he's like, don't come here if you want to get laid.
And then...
like, basically say, like, I'm not here to be your whore. I was like, oh, that's kind of funny.
There's a moment where she said, that's not why I came. And I was like, no, why you came is because of the Simone fucking...
Why you came is that 6-inch of Portuguese sausage we got going on there.
It's a new Subway sandwich. Oh, man, foot-long Portuguese.
You know his dick ain't French.
Whatever that fucking means.
Frenchmen have small dicks, I think, right? Isn't that a stereotype?
I just know...
I'm not making that up.
I thought the stereotype was that they're cowards, but in a little, you know...
I mean, that's not fair. I mean...
Anyway, we got way more stereotypes and shit to get to. It ends
just
with...
Just because their government decides not to fight in a war, that doesn't make everyone in France a coward.
Russell says she'll leave a key, and then they separate, and it's...
This fight bores me. They fight for no reasons.
Yeah, it's just...
Like, she gets all bitchy for no reason. I'm gonna leave my key. It's like, fucking leave a bitch. Go then. Do you know what this man can pull? Like, let him be unleashed. He'll go get the Kirkendalls all on him. You know what I mean?
Oh yeah, he'll be laying Simone seed all over the New York.
Oh dude, he had the reporter.
He had that bartender when that guy or whatever his name is didn't show up to their meeting, and then he's like, "Can I borrow your phone?" And she was like,
"Yeah."
She's all about it. I mean, it's, you know.
She was DTF. I forgot her name. The Hispanic detective from the other precinct who came over and worked with them was all about Simone's business. Like,
mm-hmm.
This dude does not need to wait around for you.
Anyway,
you go play dressed up with Jimmy Leary. You know what I mean?
Anyway, that was the opening to this episode. This is NYPD Blue Balls, where I, Kirk, and the other voice, Kyle, talk about every single episode of NYPD Blue, and this is the theme song to NYPD Blue.
Kirk, there's no one else on this. They know who you are. I've said your name at least twice. So I can't be Kirk unless I'm talking in the third person. Start the music.
Every episode...
Who's talking?
Every episode could be somebody's first episode. You gotta set up the rules. It's not podcast as it is. We need to have some form of structure.
Hold on.
Oh, God. This one just...
I understand that logic. I'll do this quickly if you give me my 2 seconds. I understand that logic if you have a show like How Did This Get Made?
Mm-hmm.
Or Doug Loves Movies, because every show is different, but it has a theme.
Mm-hmm.
That I get. We are episodic. No one, whoever is going to start listening to this, is going to go, oh, fuck it, I'm going to start on season 4, episode 9. I think that'll be a good lead. Oh, it's episode 8. That's a good lead in into NYPD Blue. Fuck off. Fuck those first 3 seasons. In the beginning of the 4th. Do you know what I'm saying?
Kyle, you got to keep some sort of structure, and you got to leave room for people who might just be showing up. Anyway.
I want a Twitter poll.
Yeah, learn what our fucking Twitter is and make a poll and then see.
How do all those politicians get their polls taken? I'll do one of those.
They write it themselves, then they just come out and say it.
Okay, they're a tinfoil hat. Let's get this started.
Anyway, after we come in from the theme song, we got a DOA named Willie Lopez who's got a beeper and a cell phone, and he was shot several times. They go to Canvas, and Russell is talking to some, prostitutes who may in fact be dudes.
They're not. They're women. You have to call them by what they want to be called.
As they walk up to them, Sipowicz says, very Asperger-y, too. He just goes, they're males.
Yeah, I think his exact lines were, those are males. And he points at them and just like... It's weird. He does this thing with his face where he's looking at Simone,
mm-hmm.
but everything is pointing to the transvestites.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what I mean? Like, he's staring at Simone, but his eyes are still on it, and he goes, those are males. And then Simone, I forgot what Simone says, but he has a pretty witty comeback.
He just goes,
Simone always has a good comeback for his fucking, his racism and sexism and homophobia.
Well, he kind of just goes, yeah, huh? Obviously they're dudes. So they go up and they meet Angela and Peaches. You know, best spinoff ever.
Always a Peaches in the bunch.
And they get,
because of that ass, Kirk. That's why.
These two ladies get strong-armed by the detectives, saying, we'll get you acting in concert if you don't give us who did this, because they think they know who did it.
Yeah, they got very aggressive with these two very quickly.
It kind of made me think, would they act the same way if it was other random citizens, or because they're prostitutes, or because they're cross-dressing? Are they being more aggressive?
All they had was, hearsay that they were on the corner.
Mm-hmm.
And when they asked both of them, they both said no. And then they were like, oh, well, we'll just go walk around. We'll take you in and then go walk around until someone tells us that you're always here.
Yeah, basically.
And it's like, wait, what? that doesn't make, first of all, that doesn't make any sense. And it doesn't seem right.
I did write down one quote when the prostitutes do not get their story straight. and one of them says, "She was with me the whole time." The, I believe, I don't know if it's a Hispanic or Asian one.
Angela.
Yeah, I don't know if, I don't know what race Angela is, but she goes, "Evil ho!" And that made me laugh. She just shouts "evil ho" at Peaches. Then they said, "No, you're going to come with us." And I wrote down this quote, "'Cause underneath those skirts, you got hearts of gold." And then Sipowicz says, "And Johnson's in your underwear."
I don't know what that means.
It was just a way to mention to them, "Hey, we know you got dicks in your pants."
Yeah, but it doesn't make, like, doesn't make any sense. That joke, like, is that just to show Sipowicz is always, like, it's weird because it just shows that Sipowicz is always thinking about private parts.
Well, he's also, he's uncomfortable with various members of the LGBT community. LGBTQ, and then I think there's another one that I don't remember. Keeping with the Willie Lopez story, they bring the prostitutes in, and they're getting kind of, they're hemming and hawing and not, like, picking anybody out of the lists. Sipowicz and Simone are, they just assume they know who did it, and they're not saying.
I think you brought up a good point earlier. Would they have done this too if it was two women or two males? But they weren't, you know what I mean?
But then, because I think the line, because I've been reading What Would Sipowicz Do?, which is a collection of articles written about NYPD Blue over the years. And it kind of falls in one of the articles. They talk about how the show is always set up that they never do things that are immoral or a little over the line with people that didn't actually do anything. These prostitutes are withholding information. So that's why they're, in our minds, or the viewers' minds, allowed to be rude and aggressive with them. So, in a way, it's not, oh, it's because they're, you know, transvestites or transgender or whatever. It's because they have information that they're not letting us know about. The question isn't, are they doing this because they're members of that community, if they're doing it because they're withholding information, and that's why it's okay.
I think because they're withholding information, they're upping the ante. I think if it was two men in there and they were withholding information like that, they would be like bad cop, bad cop. They would be like gruff and stuff. Mm-hmm. But because it's two men acting feminine, I think they're being a little overly aggressive because they know they can't.
No, maybe.
Like, even Simone's being aggressive.
And
like, Simone's the one who gets really aggressive and says, like, and he's the one that makes the comment about underneath their skirts, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Like, why? Like, Simone's not really ever the aggressor unless it's, like, a man.
And what's really weird is they bring in Russell to be nice to them, to maybe let their guard down.
Because she knows them, right? She makes that thing, like, she says that she knows them from Vice.
Yeah, and then it kind of, like, melts down the worry and whatnot, and then Angela lets them know that it was this guy, Arthur Cartwell, who is a character... from a previous episode who went to jail because he stood by while one guy killed two children during a robbing of a, like, drug dealer's house. He was acting...
Okay. So I got confused because it felt like this whole episode they kept saying he killed two kids.
No, he was only in the same room when it happened and he didn't do anything.
I know, but when Diane is talking to Jill later, they bring up Arthur.
Mm-hmm.
And Diane goes, I wish I would have written it down, but it was late. But Diane goes something like, "This Arthur, he's in a house, shoots two babies, goes to jail," and like she's just like and then he gets off because he saw this guy get murdered. And I was like, I don't remember Arthur shooting the two kids. I remember him robbing the place with a guy.
Yeah,
they kept acting like he was the murderer.
I think they're just upset that he didn't do more, and like it's almost like a telephone situation where it becomes, well, he's just as responsible, even though his entire story is we went in there to rob, he shot two kids, and then I had no idea that was going to happen, and I was not about that.
I remember his story, but they were literally acting like he was the one who pulled the trigger, I felt like.
His name gets brought up, and then Simone and Sipowicz kind of get a little annoyed with Peaches and Angela, because they're worried because he's related to Peaches' man. And they're like, just shut up, we have to confirm that it's this guy. And Peaches starts defending her man. And then Sipowicz says a really funny line that made me chuckle, where he says, we're not interested in Ephesians, Peaches. And I don't know why, but that just that phrase, we're not interested in Ephesians, Peaches, really made me chuckle. They get all the info that they need, and then they're like, yeah, you guys can leave. They get pastries and coffee, and as they're walking out, you can hear one of them say, these people are ruthless. And then I believe Angela says, the tall one's cute. Like, so even men that dress up as women want to get at Sipowicz, or I mean, not Sipowicz, at Simone.
Yeah, dude. I don't know if it was an older episode, but I remember an episode where, like, someone comes into the house, was like, oh, I was talking to two detectives earlier, and they're like, who? And they go, basically go like, oh, it's a short, fat one and a tall, good-looking one. They say that all the time. Like, I feel like that happens all the time where they describe, like, oh, there's, like, a short, stocky one and then the tall, good-looking one. But, like, who's the tall, good-looking guy over there? Like, that dude was slaying it, like, if Russell wasn't around.
As the story continues, they go pick up Arthur, and they keep bringing up the fact that he got out of jail after witnessing the murder of two kids. And they talk about how messed up that is. And then when they bring him in to interrogate him, he says he was a witness to a murder in the jail, so he got let out early.
Was it a murder or like a cop getting jumped or something like that?
Prison guard on that block got murdered by a convict, and he basically ratted on him to get out. So then they're like, okay, yeah, I mean, and he says,
that's
I feel
a ballsy move.
And he says, I feel no regret doing that to get out of prison. And then they ask him, well, what about the dude you shot today? And he's like, I didn't shoot anybody today. And then he tells the story, which is he was meeting the guy because the guy owes him money. And the guy didn't have the money, so they were arguing in the street. A car came by and shot him and then threw the gun out the window. Arthur picks it up and runs home with it.
We're glossing over it, but I really like this scene.
Mm-hmm.
I like the way Arthur describes the story.
Mm-hmm.
Because later on, we get it described back to us, and it's not as interesting. Do you get what I'm saying?
Kind of.
Do you get what I'm saying? Like, the way he describes it and how it went down and, like, what he puts into it as, like, a character is way... It makes that seem cooler than the scenes later.
There's a really funny point where they say, oh, so we're not going to find a gun in your apartment that matches it? He's like, even if you do, that don't mean nothing. And then Sipowicz slaps Simone. He's like, silly us thinking that's evidence. And then
I feel like that's like something I said to mom or dad.
Silly ass.
I feel like that's something that, like, in the living room, they're like, "Where'd this go?" And I'm like, "I don't know." It's like, if I check your bed, it's in there. I'm gonna beat your ass. Like, doesn't mean I took it.
What was really interesting about that scene, because this Arthur, I wish I wrote down his name, but the guy who
Caldwell.
I know, but the guy who played him. Whoever played Arthur Cartwell, he does a really good job. And then in the scene, there's a moment where Sipowicz, you can see on his face that he's like, he thinks it's credible, but they don't trust the guy. Like, the way he describes the story, they're kind of like, okay, maybe that's what happened, but you're not a trustworthy dude.
Oh, about Arthur's story? Yeah, 100%, they don't trust him.
So they say, like, oh, and the last time when we went to go find you at your friend's place, you were hiding in laundry, and you said you were up there to get a book. He's like, that's not too very credible with us, Arthur. And he's like, fine, arrest me. You've done it before. And then he kind of just, like, sits back, and they both kind of go, okay, well, I guess that's what we're going to do. So they end up booking him. And we always talk about things that, like, that must happen all the time in the, like, NYPD world. And... This has happened a couple times where a priest brings in a guy who's a witness.
Yeah, well, I mean, a lot of people do, but you find out this witness is Jewish.
And he just knows the Catholic priest.
He just knows the priest as a friend. So it's not a religious thing, but I think Boshko or Milch was probably Catholic, so they talked to a lot of priests. But priests do talk to a lot of people and can get a lot of people to, you know, feel like maybe they've done something wrong and they need to... Then they need to, like, go do the right thing. I don't know.
They convince them to do it and then say they'll go with them But
yeah, but fucking what's his name? Caruso's buddy with the priest brought in that one chick.
Yeah, and there's been a couple times, I think, mm-hmm. before and after this, where a priest comes in and mentions, like, oh, I have somebody they're going to visit, or they're going to call in. They saw something, but they don't want to make it, like, a big show. Because this guy comes in and tells the story, and it turns out it's exactly what happened, the way Arthur said. And
K. Todd Freeman. That's the name who plays Arthur Cartwheel. K. Todd Freeman.
And this guy, he tells the story, and like you said, he doesn't tell it as interestingly, but he also, like, tells it, and he's like, and I'm out. I'm done. I'm not going on the record. I'm leaving. And they're all like, okay.
Yeah, he just does it and walks away, yeah. He does the very white privilege-y thing.
And before, I didn't mention this, before they booked Arthur, they had Michael Cohen show up.
Oh, I was just about to say, Michael Cohen is such a dick.
Because Michael Cohen, like, stops by Gina.
Is that his name? Is that his name?
Michael Cohen? Oh, no. Wait, what is his name? It's ADA Cohen. Holy shit, that would be insane if that happened and I'd never noticed until now.
It's Leo, because he's super Cohen. Jewish.
Jesus.
Sorry, I forgot that he's supposed to be, like, super Jewish lawyer. Dude, he makes a fucking Old Testament reference, bro.
Well, that's one thing I liked about this scene is... He comes in, and there's another moment to just shit on their old PA, Jerry, as if it didn't happen enough. Because he goes, oh, I hope they got some draft picks with that ADA switch. and Gina's like, I don't
probably
know.
Probably one of my favorite lines. It's probably one of my favorite pickup lines ever.
Hey, man.
Because, like, he's fucking telling a chick who probably has no idea what he's talking about.
Mm-hmm. So he says that, and then she's like, I don't get your meaning. He's like, that'll be the last sports reference I say to you. And then he tells them, you better book this guy or else it's going to go cold. And they're all like, thanks for your information. And then as he leaves, he goes, a prophet is never appreciated in his own country. And she's confused again. He's like, last Old Testament one too. And what I love about this scene is, like, later, Martinez comes in just with a Coke, lays down that Coke, better game than Cohen.
Yeah, dude.
He just drops the
Coke down and she's smiling like crazy.
So this guy, this witness comes in and tells him that it's exactly like the perp said. He was just standing on the street, drive by, and then he throws the gun. The guy picks up the gun and runs away. And Sipowicz, we talked about this line a little bit before we started. They go, oh, I guess he's telling the truth. And Sipowicz says... He's the luckiest African-American going, exception for that big, dopey comedian. Simone says, who...
So much Sinbad hate.
Who?
All I have to say is, go watch It's Always Sunny with Sinbad. You'll realize how fucking awesome Sinbad is.
Rob Thomas, he's my bitch! Simone says, who, Sinbad? And Sipowicz says, oh, is that what his name is? And you're right, it's just, it is a writer who just wanted to let the world know he hates Sinbad.
But, like, why was Sinbad bringing down the 90s? Like, or is this just another reason to show that Andy Sipowicz hates black people for no reason?
Well, I honestly think it was just a specific writer who hated Sinbad. I think that's the only reason. It's the only thing that makes sense.
It's really weird.
So they bring Arthur back. And he's also doing a really good job acting, because he's like, you put me in and you take me out. He's like, it turns out it happened as you said. He's like, of course it did. Why didn't you believe me? Simone says, well, this guy, he just wants to leave you in the system for that Hummer beef. And he's like, that's how low you people are. And Sipowicz says, this is the quote. I wrote it. It took up a whole line. Our concern for justice gets a little dull with a guy who sits... with his thumb up his ass while his running buddy blows the heads off two little kids. And then he gets right in his face. And then Simone basically says, the only people that know this happened the way it did is the witness and us and you. And the witness doesn't want to go on the record. So unless you give us a name, you just go back in the system because it's cleared anyway.
I thought he gave... Oh no, he gave him the name of the person he was meeting.
And then he kind of like slinks under and he says... Gerald Vaught and his cousin Ricky. And he explains, like, the guy's always in people's faces, owing everybody money and getting on other people's turf, and and just caught up with him. And then there's like, what's Ricky's last name? And the way he looks back at Simone just goes, Cousin Ricky. He's like, I don't know. I don't know his name. Right after that, they bring him in. And he's like, oh man, that guy, Willie Lopez, was throwing shots at me. You guys didn't do anything. He's like, did you make a complaint? And he's like, no, because I take care of my own business. And Simone says, it's bright choices like that put you on the successful path.
Yeah. I mean, no offense, but Simplex isn't the one to talk about a successful path. You know what I mean? Like, people in glass houses shouldn't throw stones.
Oh, we'll talk at the end of the episode about his success.
We'll talk about some stone throwing.
Yeah, we'll talk about that next episode for sure. So, they eventually get that guy to flip, and Arthur thinks he's going to get some money out of it. Sipowicz.
Oh, dude, the best part is when he's trying to get compensation.
Because Sipowicz is like, yeah, you're not going to get dick.
Yeah. And he's like trying to talk up Kirkendall, too. It was my
information.
My tip that led them to, you know, catch who they needed to catch, blah, blah, blah.
I love how she just...
He's really good. He's one of my favorite, like, side, like, skeezy characters.
The other case that's in the middle of this is not really a case. Fancy gets a call and runs down to the Port Authority because Maceo Williams, who you may remember from several episodes ago.
Yeah, the kid he was like kind of taking care of.
He kind of short-term adopted this kid while his mother had a drug problem. And there was a mini storyline about the mom wanting custody back and then eventually being awarded it. So,
and Maceo not wanting to be with her.
Fancy gets a call from the Port Authority that Maceo's in trouble. He comes down, and Maceo has a kilo of heroin in his bag. Which, that's a lot of heroin.
How much is a kilo?
Kilogram?
Okay.
I mean, I don't
How
know.
How much is a kilogram?
I'm not sure. I've never... Hold on. Apparently it's 10 years in prison, so...
That's what a kilogram equals, Kirk? 10 years in prison?
If you're going to be a dick about it. Okay.
I'm not trying to be a dick, but like I said, how much is a kilo? And you went, oh, it's a kilogram. I'm like, no shit.
According to this, it's 2.2 pounds.
Okay.
But I'm guessing 2.2 pounds of heroin's a lot of heroin.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't know. I'm not a heroin aficionado. But he gets caught by the Port Authority with heroin, and they call him... After the cop finds Fancy's card in his wallet, and then the kid
didn't even give him his name, which is crazy.
This is where it gets kind of confusing, and I don't know if it's bad writing or if it's like they're trying to explain how messed up this kid is. Because the cop says your card was in his wallet, and then Fancy says, "Did you find it or did he show it to you?" And he says, I found it, and then he told me to call you. So then, when he gets
in... It could just be bad writing. Instead of just explaining, like... Oh, go ahead, sorry.
Because there's that part. And then when he gets in to talk to Maceo... First off, Maceo's a dick in the beginning. Where he's like, I don't know how it got there. I don't know what's going on. And Fancy...
Oh, man, he's hurt, man.
And Fancy...
He wanted to be with that man, and that man just dropped out of his life.
No, the fucking judge gave him custody, gave his mom custody.
Yeah, but he could have made efforts to go to like see him.
And then while he's being a dick to him and saying like, "You're not my father," and he's like, "No, I'm not your father. I helped you out for a time, but that's not why I'm here. I'm trying to help you out right now." And then Maceo says, in the middle of all that, "I didn't ask you here." And then later in that same conversation, he says, "Now get me a lawyer. Unless you can get me out of this, get me a lawyer. And I'm done talking." So, like, it's not 100% clear what Maceo wants with Fancy. I guess it's kind of like...
I think he wants Fancy to help, but he doesn't want to ask him because he's mad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But he knows, like, this is the only person that can help him in this situation, so he has to go to him.
Fancy goes to see his mom, Cheryl.
She is a straight bitch.
She's also a straight junkie, and she also has a TV and a microwave... That were
junkie or not, that she's a straight bitch.
Because he's like, he's just being pleasant at first, and then when he discovers the drugs and like what she's saying isn't making any sense,
Mm-hmm.
He's like, so are you having him run drugs for you? And she's like, I don't know what you're talking about. He's working construction. He bought me all these gifts with his construction job. And then she's like, I'm not, I didn't ask you in here, and I want you to leave. So he gets up to leave, and he throws her drugs back on her couch, and he says something pretty cold. I hope you're ashamed. I hope you still have that in you.
Oh, yeah, that's rough.
I hope you're ashamed. I hope you have that in you. And then she yells, he's raping me, and nobody responds. He just leaves. I don't know what she thought that would accomplish. So he leaves. He goes back to Maceo, I believe, and says, I went to talk to your mother, and he's like, I tried to get her off the stuff, but she's just on it, I guess. And he, like, there's a lot of fancy given, like, some straight man talk in this episode. There's, like, three different moments where it's just fancy laying down some wisdom.
Mm-hmm.
Where he says, the true mark of a man is to do the right thing when it's his time. Are you going to do the right thing here? With that, he says, yeah, I'll tell the truth. I'll let everybody know what's going on. And so Fancy has to go to Ray Collins, who...
This dude is a dick.
Ray Collins is a veteran dickhead of NYPD Blue. He was one that got a CI...
This dude can act like a dick. He's really good at it.
He also... This character, Ray Collins, he works for the NYPD Drug Task Force, who... When he was in an earlier episode, basically bragged about how it's unlimited overtime, everything's paid for, there's like no oversight, and you could do whatever you want. With that task force, he ended up getting one of Simone's better informants killed, and he lied about Vietnam, which got him a stern talking to from Sipowicz, and then a straight up ass beating from Simone. So
you don't fuck with Vietnam when it comes to Sipowicz.
No, you don't. You do not mess with Vietnam.
You don't lie about that shit. Sipowicz and Rambo, bro.
Sipowicz and Rambo, very similar.
They drew first blood. They drew first blood, not me.
Are you talking about Frank Reynolds? I get him confused with Rambo all the time. Fancy talks to Collins, who's a bit of a dick. And Fancy's...
Oh, my favorite part of that conversation. Fancy comes in, he's like, hey, I got this guy who wants to help. And he's like, oh, you mean this guy who's going to go to jail for a kilo of heroin? This fucking know-nothing motherfucker, basically. And Fancy has to be like, hey, you jackass, I'm coming to help you. Shut the fuck up, and do you want that help or not? And then Ray Collins just goes... let me make that phone call.
Yeah,
the line he gives is such a dick line, because Fancy's like, it all depends on if you pick up the phone and tell him that he blah blah blah, and he goes, well, let me make that phone call.
Well, yeah, like, one of the best parts of that argument is, because the idea is they do a fake drop where Maceo pretends he's dropping off the drugs, and then they get both of them.
Which, when they actually do it, it's the fucking worst drop in the world. Like, that is, like, the shittiest filmed drop ever.
And,
Kirk, the cops are, like, 6 feet away, standing, talking on fucking microphones. I get it, it's supposed to be a TV show, whatever. But, like, when you look back on it now, those cops are, like, standing, like, from, like, you to your door to those guys. And they're like on the phone, like, all right, he's getting ready. Maceo's getting ready to drop it off. and then it happens. Like, all right, wait for it.
Well, no, like, and I believe Collins actually says, like, he picked it up. Let's go, amigos. He, like, screams that into the fucking walkie talkie. And then 12 dudes. When it's like, obviously that dude's up to something if he's screaming random shit into a giant walkie talkie. But when Fancy and Collins are arguing, probably the best part is Collins is like, oh, you just want him to walk on a kilo of coke. And he's like, Ray, he's going to give you collars on this gang. You let him walk on a kilo of coke. And he's like, huh. And he's like, oh, like, and that hasn't happened before? Like, looks at him like, you don't do this all the time?
Yeah.
And then he's like, I'll make that phone call. And like,
but dude, when they do the drop, and then they arrest them.
Mm-hmm.
The guy they arrest tries to blame it all on Maceo.
Mm-hmm.
And Fancy, like, Fancy gives him a stern talking to. without kind of giving away that it was Maceo.
Well, no, what
he gives him like a stern talking to, and then they have this like weird stare off as Maceo's being put into the back of the cop car. Fancy turns around and they like lock eyes, and the Fancy's like, "That's how much I love you, bitch." Like, "That's how much I love you." Like, and he and like I'm not gonna say it, but that like I'm gonna do it in this way instead.
Yeah, well, like I wrote down, I think Fancy gave away Maceo by acting the way he did, because he straight up rolled up on the dude and he's like, "Man, that kid gave me up." And then Fancy, who wasn't doing anything before he did this, he was just walking up to the scene, like slams the dude up against the wall.
His own time? Or, like, is the precinct paying for him to be doing, like, personal drops?
Well, he's on salary. There's no way he's getting paid by the hour. He like, slams the dude up against the wall, and he goes, "No, your buddies gave you up." And he's like, and the guy's like, "Fine, call my lawyer, man. Call my lawyer." And he's like, "Yeah, we'll call your lawyer. And then we'll call your lawyer, and then you'll be doing time," and blah, blah, blah. He's like, "So get the hell out of here," and kicks him. He's like, now that guy definitely knows it was the kid. Because why would you have done that?
Because they immediately, like, eye lock.
Yeah, and then after he kicks the dude out of the way, he, like, looks at Maceo, and Maceo looks at him kind of going, "Thanks, Dad." Like, it's a very...
Papa?
The scene after that, Collins, Fancy, and Maceo run over what's going to happen, which is basically, like, a boot camp for 2 years. And if he graduates, then the felony is gone.
Which I think is a fair deal.
Assuming that he testifies against his mother, who they pull a pretty good trick on his mother, where Fancy grabs her and brings her into the house and puts him in the pokey room with the one-way mirror. She just lets it slip, "I would rather send my son to jail than back to you. And I've gotten him back in court, I'll get him back in court again."
There's only so many times a court's going to give you back after doing heroin. You know what I mean?
There's only a couple chances.
Do heroin again, go back to rehab, and then get your son back. Like, they're going to stop giving you your son back.
And Maceo sees this, and he tells Medavoy that he wants to be alone. And then when they talk about it later, one of the other awesome Fancy things was, he says, "Look, it'd be great if every kid that was born has parents that care about them, but a lot don't."
This was said.
A lot don't, and your mom and you didn't. But we're gonna see if that breaks you.
Yeah.
And he leaves, and he goes to Collins. He's like, he has to go back to Port Authority, right? And he's like, "That's my understanding." Like, Collins is really just a big dope.
Yeah. I this is a scene. Like, that conversation happened, right? I was watching it last night, and I was like, this is a pretty big scene in the early 90s, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you think about it socially, it is a well-to-do, a high-ranking, in his career, black man talking to a young black male about not going the wrong route and blah, 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 whatever. In the 90s, it didn't happen that much, you know? You had Bill Cosby. Look how that worked out. But
stay on target.
Like, this is like... like, I was watching, and I was like, fuck, dude, this scene is like, dang, this is a really good scene. Like, Fancy's killing it. And then they fucking span to Collins, and I'm like, why the fuck is he there? Like, why is he ruining this, like, personal moment? Fuck this guy. Like, what is he doing there?
He has to go to Port Authority.
Like, if that was me in real life, like, if any job I have the rest of my life, if two people were going to start having a meaningful, like, conversation because they knew each other for years, I'd be like, I'm going to excuse myself. We can take care of this later. Like, come see me. I'll be sitting on the bench. I'm gonna go fuck with Andy. How about that? I don't know.
Then the last meeting with Maceo, Fancy invites him over for dinner and says, "I could sign you out. Do you want to go to dinner? And you can hang out with my wife and the kids, and you can meet my new son." And Maceo is like, "Oh, I don't know." And he says, basically, Fancy says, I wish I wrote down the quote, because it is pretty good, where he says, "The past doesn't have to make the future. The future is how we..." basically, the future is how we understand and use the past. And then he said, "Your time with us doesn't have to be a dream that doesn't exist, that isn't a part of your real life." And then he's like, your life dealt you this card, too. So then he goes to dinner with Maceo goes to dinner with him. I assume we don't see him again after that, but...
where does he end up?
He has to go to that camp and testify against the gang and his mother.
Like, I forgot that it was a camp. I meant, like, because I know that in the, earlier in the episode he talks about, he asked his mom about having family in South Carolina, so I thought that maybe he might have gone back to a family member there.
No, they basically say it's a juvenile, like, camp. And
you're basically going to, like, you're going to a camp, that's a jail.
You're going to a detention center, but it also has schooling, so I guess if you graduate with, like, a GED, they'll expunge your record. And, I mean, that's a better deal than what he could have had. So, that's the end of the Maceo story. And we have a side story and then the end of the episode. And the side story is Greg finally asks out April O'Neil herself, Paige Turco, who plays...
Fuck, dude. I was trying so hard last night to remember who she was.
Paige Turco, who plays April O'Neil in the latter two of the live-action Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
And I would have to say the better of the two.
Okay, I mean, I don't completely agree with you on that one, but...
Secret of the Ooze? Come on.
Yeah, rewatch it. Spend that hour and a half on rewatch Secret of the Ooze.
Okay, I'll watch Vanilla Ice kill it in the end.
It starts out with Greg getting a little giddy because he sees her in the stairwell and says, I think I'm going to come up with a new route. And she's like, you plot it and I'll run it. And then he gets a little happy and walks away. And then it shows him running, and they have...
Wait, you know there's like a whole other side story, right?
What do you mean there's a whole other side story? Are you talking about Jimmy Leary?
Yeah.
That's only at the end of the episode, so I was going to lead into it after this quick sidestep.
Oh, well, no one cares about this. Like, well, she said she's a lesbian.
Okay, but there's a lot going on here that I would like to discuss. To explain my reasoning, maybe... Can I explain?
I'm not talking, so you can go.
Okay, you're the one that's getting all pissy that we're talking about...
Well, why are we having two storylines? Two guys, same friends, partners... Asking two women out, they say they're gay. One's not really gay. This one is. Who cares? Why do we have to keep finding it? Like, why are all these women having to be gay?
Well, what I liked about this story, Kyle, is they go running, and Greg finally, you know, gets the courage and says, hey, would you like to have dinner? And she says, sure, I also should let you know I'm gay. It clearly hits Greg, like, right in the chest. So she lets him have another out by saying, I'll get back to you. Then he talks to James Martinez about it, where he says, no, I'm still going to hang out with her because she's a good friend. And then they have what I would describe as a strangely mature conversation with the most awkward dialogue I've ever seen. Because they have the meal, and he's like, that was really good. Yeah, it was. And she's like, I'm sorry if I blindsided you by telling you I was gay. I didn't know when the right time was. And then Greg basically says, well, I wish you said it earlier to save some awkwardness in my thoughts. Does that mean he was thinking about, like, fucking her? Like, is that what that...
Maybe he jerked it to her.
That's basically what he said out loud. He's like, awkwardness in my thoughts. You know, lusting after you and then finding out you're not interested. Then they basically leave the table with kind of this, like, you know what, I guess we'll be friends. Cool. Everything's peachy keen. But the thing, what I thought we would discuss is how they have now done it somewhat correctly with the reveal that a character is gay, as opposed to the way they did with Adrian.
Okay, fair enough. But in my brain, why does she have to be gay to show that they, like, a man can be friends with a woman like that? Why couldn't it have just been, hey, you're kind of old and gross, and I don't want to fuck you or go out with you, but, like, we run together, you're, like, a cool dude, like, I like hanging out with you, we have cool talks, but, like, why does it have to be, like, no, I'm gay, so boom, all the sex is gone? Like, that's all I'm saying.
I'm sorry, I almost choked on my water.
Sorry.
Because you, like, said, no, because you're old and gross.
But, like, not for real, like... She's young. She's younger. She's way more attractive than he is. Like,
no, there was
how he.
When I watched this episode for the second time, and it pans from her to him, like, two times in a row, I was seriously like, what makes him think he's allowed to ask this woman out?
Donna Avendando.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Because he looks
There's
like
her... There's weird paradox in the world where Donna Avendando fucks Greg Medavoy, so it gives him the confidence to just be, like, swinging his dick all over Manhattan. You know what I mean?
Because he looks straight up like her uncle at that table.
It literally looks like he could drop her off at college.
It's true.
Like, if you gave her the right makeup, he could be dropping off at college. You're right. They may have done it the right way, but I just don't get why to kill everything off sexually, she has to be gay. And plus, you already did it. That's kind of lazy.
I don't think they did it because... I don't know. I mean, I don't know the writers. Maybe it's because the Lesniak lady wanted to leave, and... they wanted to explore that storyline in a better way or something like that, but I don't know.
Maybe they got shit for the Lesniak, the way they handled it with the Lesniak line, so this was their way to fix it. I don't know. I just, I don't know.
I found it funny how he then talks to James about it. Every dialogue between James and him is always so strange just because of the way they talk to each other.
They sound like the two dumbest people.
Well, to me, it sounds like Martinez is his older brother who's trying to be encouraging, but, like, doesn't want to be like, hey, you're acting like an idiot here. And then Medavoy also says things like, you could have bowled me over with a feather. And then you're like, oh, that's right, you're like 50 years old. Like, what are you...
Right.
Like, what are you talking about?
Like, he has asthma, he, like, has rashes and shit. He bitches about his eczema. And yet this motherfucker's trying to slay, like, a 25, 27-year-old.
He wants to get after April O'Neil. He wants April O'Neil status, and he's Greg Medavoy. So the end of this episode, Russell's in some turmoil with Simone. And she's getting ready to go out with Jimmy Leary, and there's a moment with Kirkendall in the locker room, bathroom, and I'm mentioning it again. One of the articles I read in What Would Sipowicz Do was about the secret relationship between Kirkendall and Russell, and one writer believes that that was actually a faux lesbian relationship that gets played out after... a certain character leaves the show, don't want to say who, but in that locker room, there are moments where Kirkendall takes some looks at Russell that was pretty weird. She takes some double looks and some weird...
You just gave a lot of information, and I'm trying to process all of what I know to not... I don't know how to answer that.
I have
to say that's the dumbest thing I've ever heard. That think that they were in a lesbian relationship. Because I know a lot of things that happen, and I think after she's talking with her, I think she realizes something's going on.
Mm-hmm.
And also, she looks kind of good. And I mean, they're trying to dress her. She's like, oh, I have to go all tarted up. And I was like, yo, you just had two prostitutes in who were way sluttier than you were.
Yeah, and they had dicks.
Yeah, but that's not tarted up. Like, that's like going to a club on Saturday out here. Like, I don't know what you... But, no. Get out of here with that lesbian shit. That was weird.
This meeting with Kirkendall kind of just reestablishes that she's kind of losing grip on the Jimmy Leary situation and the... Simone's situation is making it worse. But Kirkendall is very encouraging and says, well, from what everyone tells me, you're a good cop and a good person. Mm-hmm. And she kind of throws it off and heads out.
It catches her off guard. I don't think she's been told that.
By many people, that she's a good cop and a good person.
Yeah, and that made me wonder, like, what do you think she... Do you think she was more, like, thrown back by the good cop part?
I think it was a situation where she's feeling so bad about herself right now that, like, when someone says something nice about her, she's immediately, like, thrown off. But she leaves to go see Jimmy Leary, who is played by Christopher Maloney.
My Maloney, dude. He's my favorite.
Of SVU, Wet Hot American Summer, And also...
Don't ever mention Wet Hot American Summer ever again.
He's also on a show called Happy, which I watched the first couple episodes on Netflix. It's a pretty good show. It's very...
Happy's pretty funny. I liked it.
It's pretty weird, but it's very, very good.
It is.
And he is, you know, he's a dirtbag. He's coming into the bar. He takes a little bit of... He gives a little shit to the bartender, and the bartender lets him know about a call that came in about his business, and he lets it slip that it's about guns, some type of gun running situation. And then he goes into his pocket and gets something and puts it in his hand, and then slyly puts it in Russell's ginger ale after she mentions that she still won't be drinking because she doesn't want to. Then she starts to get a little lightheaded, and Jimmy quickly shoos her out of there to take her back to Shay Leary. There is a part that I found really interesting where the bartender was like, hey, what do you want to do about this guy? And then Jimmy Leary basically threatens that dude by, like, shoving a gun up his ass or killing him.
Yeah.
And then he takes Russell out, and that's when the episode ends.
As soon as he drops that pill, he, like, becomes, like, a weird, like, animal.
Well, he's...
And, like, he doesn't care about anything else other than just going and taking her home.
Well, and we've seen before that he's a dickhead, and he's a jerk, but he also, like, jokes around, and you're never really sure when he's serious, and then, like, he gets really violent out of nowhere. But when he goes into the bar... And he's, like, talking shit to the bartender about the soup. Then, after he puts the pill in, there's this one weird moment, specifically, where he sees that her, like, in her eyes, and that she's, like, leaning forward, and he goes, there it goes.
Yeah, that was creepy.
And I was like, okay.
Yeah, it was really, really creepy.
And then it started to do the NYPD Blue special effect of, like, slow motion... blurry, so we know something's happening. But yeah, he took
her. That was gross. That made me like, it gave me goosebumps. That was gross.
Anything else you'd like to say about this episode?
No. You hit all my little points.
I'm trying to see if there's anything that I highlighted that we never got to. I mean, the only thing with the Abby story that I didn't say out loud is I think she did a good job of letting him down. Because I think she saw on his face that he was a little hurt, and she gave him an out. And then they went out to dinner and had a good time anyway, and she was cool.
Yeah, but she shouldn't have to give him an out. That's the other thing. Like, she shouldn't have to feel bad that she's gay.
Well, no.
I have to give him an out.
I think she would have done the same thing if she was straight but just not interested. Where she realizes, like, oh, that really hurt him, that I don't want to be romantic. Or that really hurt this person that I don't want to be in a romantic relationship. I'll give him the out in case they're just done with it. But I don't know. Every episode of NYPD Blue Balls is on AsherBrothersPodcast.com, iTunes, Stitcher, and where you find a podcast. We're on Twitter at AsherBrosPod, Instagram AsherBrothersPodcast, where we mostly just announce when new episodes are coming out. Every episode of NYPD Blue is currently on Hulu and Amazon, and on DVD if you want to spend a ton of money to have the physical copies. And I think that's it. Have a good one. Watch more NYPD Blue. Thank you once again for listening to NYPD Blue Balls, especially after that break. I apologize. We're going to do our best to keep a consistent every other Tuesday schedule, but sometimes life finds a way. You can always keep watching NYPD Blue on Hulu and Amazon, so you don't have to keep listening to our show to enjoy the best show ever. It's fantastic on its own. You can also check out True Blue, a book written about the first couple seasons by the creators and consultants. You can check out An Unofficial Guide to NYPD Blue, written by Gene Kendall, which just goes through the entire series as a whole. You can also check out What Would Sipowicz Do?, a collection of articles about the show. I'm in the middle of that right now. It's pretty sweet and pretty informative. You can always talk to us on Twitter and Instagram, at AsherBrosPod on Twitter, at AsherBrothersPodcast on Instagram. We mostly post when new episodes are coming out, but we'll talk to you about the show. We love talking about the show. Thanks for listening to NYPD Blue Balls, and keep watching NYPD Blue.
Why did Sipowicz fucking hate on Sinbad so hard.
Oh yeah, we'll talk about that in the episode
for
too.
No reason.
That was that
like,
was
the Sinbad hate was unbelievable. Like it came out of nowhere.
You mean? Like, I mean, we'll talk. I mean, we'll talk about it again in the episode because I wrote down the quote and underlined it. He said, this guy is the luckiest African-American going, exception for that big dopey comedian. And then Simone says, what, Sinbad? And he goes, oh, is that what they call him? I just think one writer has, like, a real big problem with Sinbad. And he's like, you know what, we're gonna fucking stick it to that asshole in this episode.
I can just see, like, Stephen Botchko, like, being like, fucking got him. Fucking took Sinbad down. Someone had to do it. And I got a fat, racist white guy to do it.
Or just like...
But like, you get what I mean? Like,
just one of the head writers.
Like, normally when Sipowicz hates on somebody or something, it's related to what is going on.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And he is just calling Arthur lucky, and he happens to be a black man. And so, but like, he jumps to Sinbad. Like, it's just a weird jump in my eyes. It's so awkward.
It's just somebody in that writer's room hates Sinbad. They just like needed
him. He went from, like, dealing with trannies to being, like, fucking pissed at Sinbad. Like, you know what I mean?
Also, we gotta talk about it in the episode, but that's...
Sorry. Yeah, I'll fix that for the episode.
It was, you know, it was, I know it was going to be a great quote, because as he started it, when he said, exception for that big dopey comedian, I was like, well, I better just start writing this quote down. Because this is just a shot at someone specific for maybe no reason.
Good on Simone to guess Sinbad the first time, because there's a lot of big dopey black comedians in that era.
No, that also gives you the opportunity to accept that Sipowicz doesn't even know who he's talking about. He could be like, he could have just been like, oh, that big dopey comedian, and then he's like, oh, Sinbad? He's like, oh, is that what they call him? He may not even know which big black comedian that was.
Oh, no. Is that what they call him was definitely like him sarcastically being like, I don't know who this like, I know his name's Sinbad, but fuck him for having that name.
Yeah, have you seen First Kid? It's terrible.
No, it is not.
No, that's what Sipowicz is saying.
The First Kid is awesome.